Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. St. Louis's past is well represented in its architecture, and the Landmarks Association of St. Louis wants to keep it that way. It works diligently, that is, to promote preservation and restoration with annual lists of most endangered buildings and the most enhanced. It's that time of year for both, and we're happy to welcome Andrew Weil, Executive Director of Landmarks Association of St. Louis. Andrew, thanks so much for being with us.
You're very welcome. It's nice to be back.
Busy time of year for you.
Always.
Okay. You know, before we talk about some of the endangered and enhanced buildings, I'd like to talk a little bit about process. But what is the biggest threat to our historic buildings today? Is it time, decay, the wrecking ball, a lack of public interest?
Yes. all of those things. I think I've said on this program before that really I think the biggest threat is an overall lack of people who need the buildings. From our peak, we've lost more than 500,000 people, and with that amount of loss, you just end up with in some areas enormous amounts of vacancy, and with vacancy, you have no real economic reason or demand for a lot of buildings. Without demand, you don't have the need to repair the buildings, and away the buildings go.
How do you go about doing what you do, drawing public's attention to buildings that you want to preserve? What is the process?
Well, we have sort of a three-pillared approach. We focus on advocacy, trying to advocate for policies such as the Missouri Historic Rehabilitation Tax Credit Program that help to support redevelopment and revitalization of historic neighborhoods and buildings. We also work through the education. We provide free educational programs to really anyone who will listen to us, and those are largely supported by the St. Louis Regional Arts Commission, as we define architecture as an art and a cultural achievement. And so we provide programs to introduce new audiences to the architectural heritage of St. Louis and to present these buildings as assets, cultural assets and economic assets. And then finally, promotion. We try to provide opportunities for people to get out and explore and experience places they may never have been and to see the opportunities that really do exist in our beautiful historic neighborhoods.
But what specific criteria do you have?
Well, the standard criteria is the National Register of Historic Places. That really provides more a framework for evaluation rather than some kind of blanket coverage. But we look at architectural merit. We look at how intact a particular neighborhood is and therefore its ability to convey a sense of historical time and place. Or in the case of individual buildings, we're either looking at architectural merit. Is this the work of a master? There's also other layers of significance in terms of history, social history. Is this building, which is otherwise unremarkable, associated with an important person or an important set of events that are defining to the identity of St. Louis or the state of Missouri, or in some cases we have buildings in St. Louis that are nationally significant, such as, for example, the Shelley House, the house that precipitated the Shelley versus Kramer Supreme Court decision that struck down race-based housing restrictions all across the country, is an otherwise unremarkable house in St. Louis, but because of the history associated with it, it's really nationally significant.
Once you've identified these properties, what is your best hope? That a private entrepreneur or someone will come in and restore it? Government, what is your hope?
Well, generally speaking, I think the best outcome for any historic building is that it is used. It's appreciated and it's used. It's not about keeping buildings under glass. It's not about turning buildings into museums. It's about returning them to productive service and, once again, bringing them into the vital social and economic life of a city.
but a lot of them are in pretty bad shape.
There are many buildings that are in very bad shape, and there are many buildings that need to be rehabilitated and need to be fixed up. But if anything we've seen in the last decades is that buildings all across St. Louis and neighborhoods in many cases can fall to a pretty low level and still come back. And so many areas really are coming back strong.
Well, we'll talk a little bit later about your most enhanced buildings,
Great.
If you will. But who enhanced them, basically? Again, was it private people?
In most cases, yeah, it is private. It is private investment. And, the Historic Rehabilitation Tax Credit programs have been an important way that we've been able to, as a community, and really it's a statewide program, as a state, leverage private investment to try to overcome the initial economic hurdle of making the numbers work for putting a building that perhaps has fallen pretty far back into service. And then, once it is back into service, it's once again a contributing building to the tax base. The process of putting it back into service creates jobs. The process of the new use for that building in many cases is creating jobs and generating economic activity. And therefore, that initial public-private partnership, if you will, combines to benefit both the state's treasury as well as the community where the building lives.
What is the status of that now? It seems to me that year after year it's a subject of yin and yang in Jefferson City.
Yeah. As we approach the end of the legislative session here, frequently the attack will kind of come out of left field. Most recently, there was a provision in Senate Bill 1112 that proposed to slash the credit by about $20 million, and one of the arguments they were using to support that was that last year the amount of the tax credit program that was redeemed was far below the cap. And so people that are trying to cut the program were saying, well, look, we've got room to cut this program because we didn't approach the cap last year. Well, the reason we didn't approach the cap last year was because there was not enough staff in the State Historic Preservation Office reviewing projects. And so projects were backed up and tax credits were not being allocated, even though there were developers and private property owners lined up to restore buildings, but they couldn't get the applications processed.
I gather your position would be if those tax credits were abundant, if you will, that money would more than come back to the state.
Well, it's not just a position or an opinion. It's really an economic fact that's been borne out by multiple studies by people far more qualified to do an economic analysis than I am. It has been demonstrated to be among the most, if not the most, valuable economic development program for the state, something that returns more money to the state than it initially invests, not to mention the ancillary benefits to all of the communities statewide, where not only do they get to preserve their cultural heritage, but they get to revitalize their tax base and important neighborhoods and buildings that define them.
Well, they've got about 2 weeks to go with the legislative session, so we'll see what happens this time.
Right. We're always holding our breath, and we're always trying to get the word out in ways that people can make their wishes known and their priorities known to their legislators. Of course, it's difficult to do that when you receive notice that this bill is going to be brought up with, in this case, about, I think, less than 48 hours did we know that there was going to be a hearing on this particular bill. So it can be difficult at times.
We put out a Twitter poll trying to get some sense from our audience as to what audience members consider the most endangered buildings in St. Louis. Let me tell you what we've got. 54% said Furman Deloge Hospital. That's number one on your list, too, I should point out, is it not?
Well, it's not necessarily number one on my list of most immediate threats, but it's certainly very high up there on a highly, highly significant and potentially threatened building.
Yeah. Let me go through the rest of the numbers we have here. 23% say the Missouri Building Company, 8% say the Merrimack Route 66 Bridge, 15% choose the Condon Martin Building on Shoto's Landing, Fairfax House in Rock Hill. I suppose you're in line with all of those.
All of those are certainly things that are on my radar, yeah, for sure.
Let's go back to Furman Deloge, though. I mean, what is the best you can expect? I mean, from what I understand, it's a hospital that will be probably replaced by a hospital.
Well, that's not exactly how I understand it. My understanding—
Well, we'll go with your version.
Okay. My understanding is that the new hospital, the very exciting new hospital, I should mention, to be constructed by SSM, is going to be north of the present hospital site. And so the question to me is not whether the Furman Deloge complex or the St. Louis University Hospital complex, as people more recently may know it, will be replaced with a new hospital, but whether it will become excess capacity after the new hospital is built. And so what will the future of that building be?
You were talking about the top of the building being what's important to you. What do you mean by that?
Well, the it has a very distinctive roof line.
Sure.
that we can all recognize. And you know, our organization being Landmarks Association, if you think about that word, landmarks, at its root, it's a feature on the landscape, a geographical feature, or in this case, a built feature that helps you to orient yourself in space. And certainly this really, I mean, iconic building with its very steeply pitched sort of French Gothic roof with the copper-plated lead sheathing is a building that you see for miles and miles and defines the character of St. Louis University's architecture to a large extent. It's a roof line and a color that is quoted, if you will, extensively by the university in the rest of its architecture. So if that building were to go away, there would be, I think, a lot of people scratching their heads about why there are so many buildings that reference this particular look scattered throughout the campus.
And the copper must be worth a fortune.
Well, I wouldn't care to call attention to how much that copper is worth, because copper theft in St. Louis is an enormous problem that results in in massive damage to our masonry buildings.
We have to take a break. We'll do that now. We're talking with Andrew Weil, who's executive director of the Landmarks Association here of St. Louis, and we're talking about preserving our historically relevant buildings. If you'd like to get into the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. And send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you'd send a tweet, we'll take that at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Welcome back as we continue our conversation with Andrew Weil, Executive Director of Landmarks Association of St. Louis. We're talking about preserving and enhancing the historically significant buildings here in St. Louis and the St. Louis area. Andrew, one of the things on the list that I was surprised to see was the Route 66 bridge, the Merrimack River Bridge. It's a bridge. It's not a building.
True. Well, it's a structure. It's a man-made building. You know, as time moves on, Route 66 gains increasing importance in a collective memory in the history of the United States. And while our organization traditionally has focused on the city of St. Louis, and that's where our mission really lies, as we're seeing in so many other instances, sometimes we need to be taking more of a regional approach, not just with regard to historic preservation, but many other things, I think. And so there are certain issues that our organization is interested in partnering with others. If you notice, the effort to protect the Route 66 bridge is really a wide-ranging partnership with Great Rivers and TrailNet and Missouri Open Space Council and Missouri Preservation, a lot of other partners. So that's something that we're happy to lend our support behind, because we know that Route 66 is something that's important to our memberships and the history of St. Louis and Missouri at large.
Another structure on the list, your list and also ours, our poll response, is the Missouri Belting Company. And here, too, once again, we're talking about SSM related property, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Well, no, actually, I don't believe SSM owns that building at this point, although I think that Perhaps the Missouri Belting and the Peavely buildings are the ones that are going to be directly impacted by the construction of the new hospital, since they're both located on land north of the original hospital complex at that prominent corner. So, you know, to be honest, I think that while it's a shame to see viable buildings go away, traditionally we've spent a lot of time objecting to demolitions because they weren't going to be buildings weren't going to be replaced with anything, and that's kind of been the story for many years in St. Louis, that buildings were just being arbitrarily demolished because someone was tired of looking at it or tired of paying taxes on it. Where in this case, I'm hopeful that if these buildings are targeted for demolition, that they'll be replaced with this exciting, very exciting new $500 million hospital complex, and perhaps in this case, you know, out with the old and in with the new might be a fair trade. It's certainly not something that I would be surprised by.
That's important to point out, I think, so that people aren't confused in thinking that all you want to do is preserve the old, that there's no room for the new.
Right. No, and that's a common criticism, and I think it's a misperception that this is a reactionary, you know, effort to keep everything that's old around, and that's not the case. It's really more our mission is really more to help try to inject some thinking into the planning process and try to encourage excellent new design in addition to preservation when appropriate.
Right.
But certainly there is plenty of room for wonderful new buildings in St. Louis, and in some cases, a new building could have a much higher merit than an existing building that's there.
Right. I want to get to enhanced buildings in a moment, but let's take a couple of calls first. People want to react to what they've heard so far. We'll start with Randy. He's calling from Cherokee Street, busy place these days. Randy, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I think I've known Andrew long enough that our friendship probably qualifies for a sort of tax credit. As a board member of Landmarks Association, I just want to echo the points that Andrew made. That, you know, our built environment in St. Louis is our single greatest competitive advantage over other cities. They just don't build cities and neighborhoods with this kind of quality and craftsmanship anymore. And we're lucky to live in a city that every corner exudes a sense of place that's irreplaceable. So that's why I think as a city, we really need to collectively embrace these structures and recognize that that's what sets us apart from competition. You know, older cities can always build new to keep up with emerging trends, but newer cities can never replicate this kind of urban fabric that we have all over the city and often take for granted. And one final point is that, you know, a lot of times these buildings are in danger because the powers that be want to make parking convenient, readily available to entice, you know, would-be employers or amenities. And I think that's really the wrong approach. We really need to capitalize on our inherent assets that make St. Louis a very urban city without even trying, and emulate cities that understand that density is the key to a vital, vibrant, successful city.
Randy, thank you for the call. I'm sure you're very much in sync with Randy.
Yeah, thanks, Randy. The check's in the mail.
Right. But he makes a point that I know you make, too, is you don't want to see some of these buildings replaced by parking lots, which happens a lot.
Well, that has traditionally happened, and that was a very common thing across the country in the second half of the 20th century, and we were trying to adapt as a society to this massive frame shift to an automobile centric type of a world. But as we know, that format is changing as well, and mass transit is certainly becoming more and more important. I know that a north-south Metrolink line is on the agenda of our mayor at this point, and I think that would do wonderful things for the city. I also have spoken with former Mayor Vince Schemel, who is very involved with Metro, and they're thinking about how are they planning for the future. And I don't mean to speak for him, but my impression that I got from him is that the people that are planning these things are really not thinking too much about providing vast areas of surface parking for the next 20 or 50 years. They're thinking about density and transit-oriented development. So
sure.
It's time to move on from this parking-obsessed development pattern.
We have been just reading overnight, as of yesterday, about Southwest Bank at Kings Highway and Vandeveer, and the fact that there's some doubt about its future.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't want to speculate too much on that right now. What I know is that there is nothing official on the books, but there certainly are rumors, and I think those rumors are certainly rooted in truth, and we'll have to wait and see on that. But I think, the Southwest Bank is clearly a building that not just everybody knows, but has such a fascinating story associated with it, that these are the kinds of buildings that we need to think long and hard about what we're going to trade them in for, if indeed they need to be traded in.
The great bank robbery and Steve McQueen are all associated.
Absolutely.
It was Southwest Bank. Let's take another call. We'll bring in Dick calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Dick. You're on the air.
Don and Andrew, I'd just like to echo both Randy and Andrew's comments about historic preservation and economic growth not being mutually exclusive, and in fact, value added. And the most vivid example is the decision we just had on a $1.7 billion NGA headquarters, where the NGA said among the deciding factors was the urban fabric and the mixed-use character of downtown related to Northside and Grand Center. And I think the historic properties are part of that, and the fact that we have the historic tax credits as a strong tool is something that we need to continue to sustain.
Nick, thanks for the call.
Yeah, I agree with that. There is a certain irony in the North St. Louis decision, in that there will be historic buildings that are sacrificed, people displaced, and institutions displaced. But in the long run, and not speaking necessarily on behalf of my board or even my staff, it's a sort of to a certain extent a controversial issue. But I really the retention of this almost $2 billion facility and the retention of over 3,000 jobs in the city, those things are going to have positive long-term impacts on historic preservation, not necessarily just in the immediate vicinity, but overall making historic buildings and older neighborhoods in the urban core more viable and more desirable in the long term. And so arguably the loss of the fabric for what is a very spread out campus, a very sort of suburban campus, but apparently, from the beginning they've been saying that was necessary from a security standpoint. And in the long term, I regret the loss of the buildings, and I regret the social impacts of the people that are in that area. But in terms of the positive impact for the greater good in the city of St. Louis, I think the NGA thing is a fantastic, fantastic thing.
Let's take a final call here, then we'll talk briefly about enhanced buildings. Mike in St. Louis, go ahead. It's your turn, but please make it quick.
Hi, Don. Yeah, I'm a big fan of historic preservation, but I understand private people have to do the certain thing. We lost the stacks on the that warehouse on Southwest Avenue a while ago, which is a shame, but they just couldn't afford to rehab them. But the water towers in North St. Louis are under a lot of stress, and there's not a lot of advocacy for that part of the city yet. I go to the South Water Tower a lot and have been involved in the moonlight openings and all the other openings, but it's quite an event now. But the North Side Towers, which are iconic, and again, define the neighborhood. They're the landmarks, and we've got to figure out a way to save some of these landmarks. And I just wonder if you have any comments about the North Side Water Towers.
Yeah, if I've got a moment, you're absolutely right. They're incredibly important buildings to St. Louis, and also nationally. They're a very rare property type, and they are defining landmarks. We wanted to apply for a grant called the Save America's Treasures Grant several years ago to support that would be the perfect program to support the rehabilitation or stabilization work needs to be done on those two north side water towers. But unfortunately, that program has been discontinued and put on hold due to funding constraints. As you know, the South Grand Water Tower has its own preservation foundation associated with it. No such foundation exists for the the other two properties, which are the, you know, the property of the water department. So yeah, they're problems. They're wonderful buildings. They need to be preserved, but I don't have the solution at hand at the moment.
Can you give us kind of a sneak preview of the enhanced building list that's coming out? That's coming out in May, is that correct?
Yeah, we have our annual Most Enhanced Awards on May 19th. This will actually be the 20th annual award, so it's a celebration for us. And this is where our opportunity every year to really wave the flag above the wonderful rehabilitation projects that are taking place. Most of the year, it seems, unfortunately, it's kind of the if it bleeds, it leads phenomenon, where we're, the media and our efforts are looking at buildings that are being threatened. But really, every day there are great buildings being completed and rehabbed in St. Louis. And this year, while we're still accepting applications, by the way, nominations until the end of this week, but I can tell you that the arcade building downtown is certainly the largest and just the most prominent of all of the buildings that were nominated this year. And nod, nod, wink, wink, I'm pretty sure that one's a good candidate.
Okay, well, I'll take your word for that, Andrew Weil. Any of the others that you might be able to tell us about?
Well, the award ceremony itself is going to be at a former furniture store that's now an event space on Manchester, right by the city limits. It's called Majorette. And that was really a very depressing call center with cubicles packed in so tightly you couldn't even walk, and really had was not an attractive place, and now it's been rehabbed and is a beautiful, beautiful new event space. So that will also be getting an award this year.
What is your favorite building in town?
My favorite building in town? What is my favorite building in town? I don't know. I think maybe right now it's sort of like you can't ask a parent what his favorite child is, right? Put me on the spot like that, yeah. Don. Have been spending so much time thinking about the Deloge Tower, I think that and its associated chapel, which is really underknown. The Chapel of Christ the Crucified King is a Ralph Adams Cram chapel attached to the south side of the Deloge Tower on South Grand. And both of them are just masterpieces. And the chapel itself is such a gem. And the tower is so iconic. I think right now, perhaps those are my favorite buildings that I see on the landscape when I'm passing by.
Sure, I think we all have our favorite places. No question about it. What about the McKee project, the North Side regeneration?
I don't know. I think it's time to have him back on.
Well, what would you ask him?
I think my understanding is that a lot of the plans, they've said that without an anchor tenant such as NGA for that area, that a lot of plans can't proceed. And I'm hopeful that with NGA relocating to that area, that some of these places, like, for example, the Clements House, that Mr. McKee has pledged to rehabilitate, and is in the immediate vicinity of the NGA, that he'll follow through with some of those plans, and that the stabilizing effect that the NGA will have overall on that near Northside neighborhood will result in the economics of rehabilitation and revitalization changing.
Do you think this is an exciting time for St. Louis? I mean, we've got Cortex coming in and thriving. We've got everybody points to Whole Foods and IKEA and some of the things that are going on. And, of course, NGA is a huge deal, as you've indicated.
You know, I think that it is in many ways an exciting time for St. Louis. I think that the Central Corridor right now is an enormously bright spot, and many areas of the near South Side and in addition, some areas of the near North Side. I think downtown is exciting. One of the things that I've noticed is a shift with the Preservation Board agendas is that It used to be, even, you know, 5-6 years ago, that mostly they were reviewing things like demolition applications or alterations to, you know, unauthorized alterations to buildings in some of the more tightly restricted historic districts. Today, we're seeing new construction constantly, people proposing new buildings on formerly vacant lots. And it's getting to the point where some neighborhoods, the ability to rehab houses is almost drying up, and as a result, we're moving to new construction and filling the gaps back in from buildings that burned down or were knocked over in the past. And just the enormous amount of new construction that's going on everywhere from, you know, there was a beautiful new building just opened on a essentially formerly vacant lot along Manchester in the Grove. Mm-hmm. And, you know, new building permits to me are very exciting, even though it's not historic preservation, but it has a great impact on the surrounding neighborhoods.
Yeah, it's great to see what's going on in the Grove. It's another area that is perking up. We're talking with Andrew Weil, who is Executive Director of the Landmarks Association here in St. Louis, talking about preserving our historic architecture and our historic buildings. We'll come back, continue that in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Getting back, Andrew, to some of the things we started our conversation with regard to endangered properties, I noticed on the list that there is a significant number of churches and schools that are also involved.
Yeah, these are unfortunately perennial problems. And this is, you know, coming back to the beginning here, the loss of such an enormous amount of population in the 20th century has, you know, resulted in places that were once, you know, important institutions and centers of life in neighborhoods, you know, aside from the housing stock being vacant, but the grand churches and the schools, you know, the St. Louis City Public Schools, there's, I believe, it's close to 30 vacant school buildings at this point that are actively being marketed for sale and conversion to something else. And that's something that we're seeing a lot of, really. There's a school in Soulard right now, that's Lafayette School, that's being converted into housing. Gratiot School is being converted into housing. They're happening, but there are a lot of schools in other areas of the city where you don't have the demand that are really languishing. And unfortunately, we're probably going to end up losing them.
And that's a shame for a lot of reasons. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember from some reportage in a past lifetime about the Bittner schools, the architect who designed these schools, and that they were, I don't want to say unique, it's a tough word to use, but they were very, very different and really set the standard and the model for many other cities, did they not?
Yeah, they absolutely did. And, you know, St. Louis City Public Schools were a model, both in terms of educational policy and methodology, but also in terms of architecture, in the way that Ittner designed buildings to not necessarily overawe, but inspire students that when they left the street or they walked in out of the neighborhood, they were walking into a palace of learning and a place that inspired respect and a sense of reverence for you know, the building and what was intended to happen inside that building. And that's something that cities all across the country came to St. Louis to study, the buildings. In addition to their beauty, the utility and the systems that he put in and the way he thought about light and airflow and fireproofing and adding telephones and showers and things like that in purpose-built auditoriums, they were all really revolutionary for the time.
You mentioned the airflow, and that's something I remember from, again, things I did years ago with regard to the placement of windows so that the kids, and in St. Louis, it's important, could keep relatively comfortable during the hot weather.
Relatively comfortable and cool. And also, of course, you know, a lot of these buildings were built, you know, prior to highly reliable electrical systems. And so the amount of natural light, maximizing natural light, was very important. And that's why these buildings are so suitable for conversion to housing or to other institutional purposes, is that all of those things he was thinking about 100 years ago still apply to the sorts of environments that we want to be in today.
With regard to the churches, and there are a couple of them on the list, how complicated is it finding out details of ownership? And if you want to preserve the building, where does one go?
Well, it's not hard to find the ownership of any building in the city of St. Louis. You can just check with the assessor's office. But there are many churches, just like the school system has decommissioned schools that are excess capacity. The St. Louis Archdiocese and other denominations have decommissioned or sold off buildings that they no longer need, that they no longer have congregations associated with them. And you know, the thing is that some of these massive churches used to, I remember Most Holy Family, the priest up there, telling me that they used to have two, maybe three masses in a row stacked up in the early 20th century, where they'd have 1,000 people in each one of them. And today, some of these congregations are down in the, literally the single or double digits. And they're gigantic buildings. They need an enormous amount of upkeep. And they're difficult to repurpose, especially because the Historic Rehabilitation Tax Credit Program, which enables a lot of other difficult buildings to be put back to service, one of the things it requires is the retention of character-defining spaces. And for these churches, the character-defining space is this massive auditorium. So you can't carve it up and turn it into apartments or houses or, you know, whatever it is. You have to leave that space intact. And what do you do with it?
Yeah. Well, Andrew, I want to thank you so much for being with us and doing a little overtime gig for us here.
Yeah, no
appreciate
problem.
That. It's always nice to talk to you. And we'll put information with regard to some of the things that you've got going on our website at stlpublicradio.org.